Adetokunbo lagged on the floor. The rim will feel that one tomorrow.
Oh my goodness, the extension. He takes off again from the free throw line. My goodness.
As we enter the final stretch of the NBA season, the league's MVP favorite and the team with the best record both reside in Milwaukee. But is it a foregone conclusion that the Bucks will win it all? Which of the two LA powerhouses poses the biggest threat? And have the Sixers really turned a corner? Today, with the NBA back in action, Doris Burke answers our most pressing basketball questions and tells us how the playoffs might shake out. I'm Mina Kimes. It's Thursday, February 20th. This is ESPN Daily, presented by ADT. Hi, Doris.
Hi, Mina. Good morning.
Doris Burke is an NBA analyst for ESPN. So, Doris, the All-Star break is over and NBA games are back. We wanted to talk to you about what surprised you so far this season and how you see the last couple of months shaping up as we enter the home stretch before the playoffs. Let's start in the East, right, where there is an unequivocal number one team in Milwaukee. They have the best record in the NBA, and they are destroying teams, winning by an average margin of victory of more than 12 points per game. Now, of the 11 teams that have had a double-digit margin of victory over the course of a season, eight have gone on to win it all. Doris, is there something that stands between Milwaukee and the NBA Finals?
Yeah, this is a great question. So in their eight losses, the one thread that is consistent throughout those are teams are averaging 16.9 threes. And philosophically, their priority is protect the paint first and foremost. They are so elite at that that we have not seen this kind of rim protection in the modern NBA, with the possible exception of a Spurs team that had both Tim Duncan and David Robinson. But the fact of the matter is, if a team gets hot and really can create shot opportunities, then I think that they can be beat. The other thing that happens is Giannis is going to, and you saw it in the All-Star game, Giannis is the first player to go 25-11 in back-to-back All-Star games, but he was 0-2, no points in the fourth quarter, because they did what playoff teams will do. They set up a wall and they said somebody else is going to beat us.
So while no one's really doubting the Bucks at this point, I think there is still a lot of skepticism about the number two seed in the East, the Toronto Raptors. I mean, after losing Finals MVP Kawhi Leonard, they were not seen as favorites coming into this year. Yet, they have the same record right now that they had at this point last season. Doris, on one hand, the Raptors have been under 500 against winning teams, but on the other, they have had a lot of injuries. Are we underestimating them?
Well, I'm definitely giving them a puncher's chance to get to the Eastern Conference Finals and a puncher's chance to come out. In the past, historically, particularly when DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry were on the team together, what we knew was they understood how to win in the regular season. But there always seemed to be this level of doubt in their minds when the calendar turned to April. But the fact of the matter is, they changed that a year ago with a championship. There is a different feel, a different presence, a different countenance about the entire group. And yes, unequivocally, the record versus plus 500 versus minus 500 is concerning. But let's remember that their top six guys, including Serge Ibaka, who's having the best year of his career, Kyle Lowry, Marc Gasol, Fred VanVleet, Norman Powell, Pascal Siakam, all six of those guys have missed at least 10 games. So I don't know that we have the clearest picture. The other thing working in their favor is they have one of the best coaches in the league. You know, Nick Nurse wears that head coach's mantle with ease. Why? Well, because he's been calling the shots for the vast majority of his career in any number of circumstances. He's creative. He's fearless. He's a little bit irreverent. And I'm telling you, Mina, I give them a puncher's chance to get to an East Finals and a puncher's chance to get out.
Did you see this coming at all, Doris?
Not even close. And this is the question, really, ultimately. Do they have enough offense? And what you're seeing is, to me, what appears to be this grooming of Pascal Siakam of, all right, you got to go get your own. In those minutes in a playoff circumstance where you don't care whether it's a mid-range two, a fallaway jump shot, a jump shot under incredible duress of excellent defense, what matters is I need to put the ball in the basket right now because this game is teetering. in our control or theirs, and we've got to have one. And you're watching Pascal. Can he deliver in the postseason? He's been excellent in the regular season. I can't wait to see it play out.
I think it feels right now like you've got the Bucks in a tier of their own, and then you've got the Raptors, Celtics, Heat kind of swirling around each other. There was a feeling ahead of the trade deadline that the Heat could vault to that number two spot and perhaps even, you know, contend with the Bucks if they really went all in and added Gallinari. They didn't. They did add Iguodala. Do you think that's enough?
You know, the last prism through which I saw Andre Iguodala was a man who was, I think, battling an Achilles in the playoff series and seemed to be showing the signs of some age. But what I know unequivocally is this man, from a basketball intellect standpoint, according to Steve Kerr, is one of the smartest in the history of the league. He has got championship DNA. He's got positional versatility on the defensive end. That basketball intellect and the ability to process information quickly and to do it under the spotlight of the playoffs, he has all of that. I'm anxious to see how he changes the dynamic. The Miami Heat, you know this, they're going to play hard defensively every single night. They're going to mix in one of the most effective zones we see in today's NBA. And Eric Spoelstra is an outstanding coach. So right now, sitting in that four spot, how far Jimmy Butler can take him, that'll be interesting. Those young guys, right? Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, all those guys who have performed so well in the regular season, when the calendar switches, can you win with them? Let's see.
When I mentioned the teams in that second tier, notably did not include the Philadelphia 76ers.
I did notice that.
Maybe they should be there and probably do deserve to be there. But before the season, Doris, people had them at the top of the East. Undeniably, I think they've been disappointing on a number of levels. And there's been a lot of questions about fit, not just the fit between Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons, but also with Al Horford, who they just moved out of the starting lineup. It looked good against the Clippers, but do you think that's going to stick?
So I had them Christmas Day against Milwaukee, and they flat dominated that basketball game. Then they dominate the Clippers, and you're thinking, that is the Philadelphia 76ers team that everybody expected to compete, to come out of the Eastern Conference. But they are the most drama-filled team in the league. They have these negative narratives swirling around that the players consistently are asked about. So Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons are both playing in the All-Star game, and the local reporters are asking them, can they long-term be a fit?
I mean, I love playing with Joel. I think he's an amazing talent. I got a lot of respect for his game, and I know he feels the same way about me.
You just look at the last 2 years, what we've been able to do, and I think he can walk, and he's going to walk.
And both basically suggest, yes, that's not the problem. It's a little concerning to me, Mina, that Brett Brown, because he's trying to fit this unique group together, is still figuring out rotations. So you move Al Horford to the bench. You reward Furkan Korkmaz for going back-to-back 30. You think downsizing will help. Maybe that allows the passing game of Al Horford to shine with the second unit. And then Furkan Korkmaz comes out and goes 0-for-5 and doesn't score in that game. So there's a lot going on with the Sixers. And what we know unequivocally is, as they stand in the fifth spot, they are abysmal on the road. And whether that's just an anomaly or a problem that will be in their heads in the postseason, I think it behooves them to get to the fourth spot before all is said and done in the regular season.
Which of those four teams, or the Raptors, Celtics, Heat, and Sixers, as currently constituted, mount the best challenge to the Milwaukee Bucks?
I really like the Boston Celtics. I think they have three guys that are elite shot creators in Kemba, Jason, and Jalen. They have, by platoon system, between Tice, who's been better than I expected, and Enes Kanter, manned admirably that center position. The one thing I would have wished for that team is that Robert Williams would have been healthy all year, because I think he needed to build equity with himself, with his teammates, understand where he fit in the rotation. Athletically, he's different than either of those two men. And the bench, can they deliver when it matters? I like the Boston Celtics. I like their vibe, and I like what they do defensively. Every team, to me, though, seems to have, you know, some chinks in their armor. I just think you can get to them in different ways, Mina. You know what I mean? There's little pressure points that could build over the course of a 7-game series that people are going to just keep tapping on that one weakness.
All right, after the break, let's talk about the West, where the number one team is a little less clear.
Yes.
The best teams start with great talent, but finding the right people can be a challenge. I mean, just ask the New York Knicks. When it comes to hiring for your business, ZipRecruiter can help you find the right candidates for your team fast, from healthcare to manufacturing to business services and more. And now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 top job sites, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right skills and experience for your job and actively invites them to apply. You can even add screening questions to your job listing so you can filter candidates and focus on the best ones. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. And right now, to try ZipRecruiter for free, my listeners can go to ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. That's ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter.com/ESPNDaily. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. So Doris, let's turn our focus to the West, where the playoff picture looks very different from recent years on account of, well, Golden State no longer being Golden State. Everybody was hyped at the beginning of the season for the Battle of Los Angeles, and it really hasn't disappointed. The Lakers have the number one seed right now, but the Clippers, well, nobody knows if they're really trying in the regular season. And then they went out and added Marcus Morris at the trade deadline. It's been reported that former Pistons guard Reggie Jackson will be signing with them. Do you think that puts them above the Lakers?
To be honest with you, Mina, I thought they were above everyone else before that. And I know there's been some continuity issues. So what you would think going into the season would have been their closing lineup: Patrick Beverley, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Montrezl Harrell, and Lou Williams. To this point in the season, they have played a total of 18 clutch minutes. So game 5 points or less in the final 5 minutes. They've only been able to, because of load management, because of injury management, however we want to phrase it, they haven't had that kind of continuity. If you want to know the kinds of things that keep coaches up at night, that's it. About a week prior to the All-Star break, I had Doc Rivers, and he was so looking forward to the 2 days of practice that every team gets coming out of the All-Star break, and then Paul George hurts that hamstring. I still believe they have the highest ceiling. There's some questions here. Number one, is Paul George going to be healthy? Number two, who is your closing lineup? Is Lou Williams in that lineup? Does it become matchup related and you substitute Marcus Morris into that closing lineup? There's issues there. You know, we've heard talk about dissatisfaction and chemistry and the unequal treatment of their stars, Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. I don't know that that matters. I think the first time Kawhi puts up 30, 10, and 7 in a game 6 of one of those series, those kinds of things go out the window. I still believe the Clippers are the highest ceiling team on both ends of the floor, and in my mind, the team to beat for a championship.
Well, the actual number two seed, which I cruelly skipped over, is Denver. And
believe me, people in Denver know this, Mina.
I'm sorry, Nuggets fans. But, you know, I think there's always lingering questions about them and how they stack up with those top two teams. Even though Nikola Jokic is playing at a, you know, top tier elite level, I think they're another team, Doris, like Miami, where there was some hope they might get demonstrably better at the trade deadline. And, you know, for weeks there were rumors that they might be going after Drew Holiday. Obviously they didn't. Do you think they will be stuck in sort of that purgatory between the two LA teams, or is there anything they can do, or do they have the ability to match up with them?
They are a fascinating team for me, and for this reason. Number one, the playoff experience they gained a season ago, the 7-game series that they lose against Portland, was just critical in their development. I still think they may be a year away, but here is some ways that maybe they can make more noise, or at least make more life more difficult on one of those LA teams, say in a second round series. Jamal Murray has got to be at the top of his game. He's not necessarily a shot creator, but he has this unique chemistry with Nikola Jokic. They will sort of reverse the pick and roll where Jamal may screen for Jokic. There's this just dynamic between those two players that's really fun to watch. Michael Porter Jr. has added this element of shot making and athleticism and can get on the backboards, can tip dunk, can change the momentum of a game. They have this elite defensive player in Torrey Craig. And of course, the axis on which it all spins is Nikola Jokic, who after a very slow start that had people in Denver concerned, has been nothing short of sensational. The sum of their parts is what makes that group special.
How do you think some of these teams in the West, like Denver, but also the Jazz, with dominant bigs, match up with the teeny tiny Houston Rockets?
The grand experiment in Houston, right? It's been a fun thing to watch. I think part of what's gone into this is Mike D'Antoni has told us over the course of the last several years that when he was in Phoenix, they let the outside noise, the narrative about you can't win that way, affect them, and it held them back from achieving that potential. And so this idea that you're going to take 53s in a game, you're going to spread the floor, you're going to do everything in your power to maximize what Russell Westbrook brings in terms of his ability to complement James. And here's the thing, Mina, I don't know if this will have an effect, but the number of dribbles on every James Harden possession is down. The amount of minutes, I believe, are down. Like, I do believe that there could be less fatigue for James late because of the presence of Russell. Whether that plays out or not, I don't know. The Utah Jazz are intriguing because they can be the best shot-making team in the league, and Rudy Gobert is the back-to-back defensive player of the year, and he'll have stiff competition for that award, but he flat changes what you do on the offensive end.
What we're seeing from Westbrook in this particular lineup where he no longer takes threes, right?
Yes.
Is that kind of peak Russell Westbrook? Is this perhaps the most efficient iteration of him that's ever existed?
Yeah, and I think one point that everybody seems to be overlooking in the midst of this is, in addition to eliminating that three, which is critical because he's not been good at all. I mean, below 30%, it's not pretty to watch, but he has gone back to a north of 80% free throw shooter. So the pressure he puts on you at the rim, the pressure he puts in trying to keep him in front of you, that ability to get to the free throw line and then knock him down is critical to their success. And listen, I have great admiration for the man. He lays it on the line every single night, and he's fearless. And I don't expect him to blink when the playoffs come.
Well, let's talk quickly now about the 8 seed, which I find fascinating. Right now, it's Memphis behind Rookie of the Year front runner Ja Morant. But ever since Zion Williamson returned from injury, the Pelicans have unsurprisingly hit another gear, and they actually beat Memphis head-to-head. But they're still 5 games back. Is there enough time for them to catch up?
Oh, this is a great question. It goes to the games that New Orleans lost early in the season. Many nights they had an opportunity to win and couldn't close the deal. They were abysmal on the defensive end of the floor, and it's really, I think, going to cost them in the long run. The greater threat would probably be Portland to the Memphis Grizzlies. But I have to say this, when Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson and Dylan Brooks, like, didn't blink about making their feelings clear about Andre Iguodala, it showed me this sort of resolve, this belief in what their coach has given them. To be honest with you, if you had asked me this question a month ago, I would have told you I believe Portland's experience in coming back from these kinds of deficits and making their way into the playoffs, I would tell you that they had the advantage. As it stands right now, I think Memphis can keep hold of that 8th spot.
Thanks so much, Doris.
Mina, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Coming up, what Ryan Newman's remarkable recovery tells us about the state of racing. Now you can win a $250,000 home renovation designed by the Scott Brothers in an ADT smart home security system. To enter, just head to ADT.com/pass the protection and tell us what you want to protect. A beautiful home is great, but a safer home is even better. Now's your opportunity to get both.
The winner and the winner's home will be featured in an ADT video with the Scott Brothers. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Ends March 16th. Must be 18 or over and a homeowner as of February 1st, 2020. To learn more about the contest and read the official rules, go to ADT.com/pass the protection. Here's another story I want you to know. It's been a few days since the conclusion of the Daytona 500 left racing fans shocked and terrified when driver Ryan Newman was involved in a frightening crash. His car was hit by another vehicle, flipped upside down onto its roof, then hit another car before coming to a stop across the finish line. At the time, many fans and racing reporters feared the worst. But in the end, Newman did survive the crash, and on Wednesday, pictures and video of him walking out of the hospital with his two daughters made the rounds on social media. Needless to say, it's an amazing turn of events, and also a testament to how far racing has come since legendary driver Dale Earnhardt died in a crash at the same race nearly 20 years ago. Our own Ryan McGee, who has been covering racing sports for decades, was in Daytona Beach this week, and he joined NPR's All Things Considered to talk about some of the safety improvements that may have saved Newman's life.
Ryan Newman last night had on a head and neck restraint. Ryan Newman was in a race seat that was custom designed for his build. Ryan Newman was surrounded by a cockpit that had more room in it, but yet was much stronger than the one that Dale Earnhardt was in so many years ago. And that very first impact that you saw, when Ryan Newman had a right front corner impact into the wall, he hit what we call a soft wall. That's called a safer barrier. It's designed to absorb energy away from the car and away from the race car driver. So literally everything on the list, things that all existed before Dale Earnhardt died but weren't mandated until after he was dead, those are the things that saved Ryan Newman's life on Monday night.
On Wednesday, Ryan wrote about the crash and how, in recent years, there have been columns and debates about the question of whether NASCAR has become too safe, and how there are those who believe danger is a necessary part of the sport. Newman's crash, Ryan wrote, was a reminder that that danger still exists, and his survival shows us that the safety changes are working and racing is better for it. I'm Ina Kimes, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.